A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
A communication disruption can only mean one thing:
negotiation. We've lost all communication.
Invasion. What will the future of Star Wars bring?
You must contact me.
You must contact me and listen to Reed.
They wouldn't dare.
It's unthinkable.
In this Yobibbles Babble Bubble Star Wars Prequels Appreciation Podcast.
It's outrageous.
Hello and welcome to CO Bibbles Babble Bubble, your one pod racer pit stop for all things Star Wars prequels appreciation. There we go. Came out in a good swoop there, where we get to talk about everything we love about the Star Wars prequels, the prequels era, and things inspired by it. Once again, here on the show, breaking the record for most guest appearances on the Babble Bubble is the Zabologist himself, all the way from the land down under. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm really well in this lovely morning, and I must say, I think you've broken the record for our most reoccurring guest on our show at It's True All of It. There you go.
All right. Well, I'm very happy that we get to have this friendship. You know, I say at the beginning of every episode that you're on that we're so lucky that we're able to have this international, you know, trans dateline of recording going on, you know, coming in from the future versus my past over here and whatnot. So it's it's all fun and dandy. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the Sith and the bounty hunters of the sort of the prequels and Clone Wars era, drawing a lot of stuff from the show, kind of maybe some characters that were introduced in the movies in the background that the show dived more into or got expanded on if they were in just a single film. So it'll just kind of be a fun discussion of some of our favorite villains. You know, one of the more recent times that Zabologist was on the show, we talked about the Jedi, so it's only fair that we come in from the opposite side of things. And let's have a look at some of those colorful villains and maybe find out they're not so villainous after all, and that dichotomy of light and dark is just what's being pushed as a greater narrative may be a little unfair to some of these people.
Yeah, and look, this is exciting for the listeners out there. We just organized this only a couple of hours ago when I was half asleep, saying a message, when can we organize this? And I'm thinking, oh, how about now? Maybe in a couple of hours. But because I was on a previous episode when we were talking about the Jedi and all my favorite characters, I just thought, gosh, why not talk about some more favorite characters in the prequel era, which I don't get a chance to do much because I don't have a lot of friends that are into the prequels as much as I am. So this is really cool.
Well, I'm glad to be your prequels outlet, you know. Oftentimes a lot of people forget about it because there's the glitz and glam of the recency of the sequel trilogy, or, you know, sort of the diehard purist who just fell in love with the original trilogy that got this all started. The prequels is kind of hanging out, you know, little turn of the millennium by themselves over there. So that's why, you know, we started the show and the whole idea just to give the prequels a little bit of love. So naturally there are a lot of bounty hunters and pirates and a lot of really cool characters that we see in the Star Wars prequels, either in the forefront or the back front, but really it's the Clone Wars TV show that expands upon them, you know, much more. We have episode arcs where they play the main villain, or even in sometimes we see playing the main, you know, hero in a way, in a different light. So I want to start off with a character who isn't necessarily the biggest here, but I think it's just cool because it's in the Jedi episode, we talked about how Quinlan Vos was a cool background character in the Phantom Menace who fans just fell in love with and said, we want to see more. What is this guy all about? And so we get introduced to this really cool Jedi. So I think from literally the same movie and just a few scenes down the line, let's talk a little bit about Aurra Sing, who is introduced in The Phantom Menace just as a viewer of the, whatchamacallit, the pod race that we see there.
Yeah. Okay. And I must say, Aurra Sing is one of my favorites. When The Phantom Menace came out, it's like, this is exciting. Another Star Wars movie. Finally, we've been waiting 16 years. And let's have a look at all these characters. Obviously bought the figure and wanted to know more about her, and I was very excited to see her more in the Clone Wars. So from the Clone Wars is where we get character development from her. I love, she's, I'm not going to go through all the episodes that she's in, but I'm just going to go through some of the ones of my favorites that I can remember on the top of my head. But in season 2, episode 22, I think the episode title in the Clone Wars is called Lethal. You see the relationship between Orisinh and Hondo. Hondo, one of my favorite characters. We'll talk about him later. She's landing and he's going, Hondo says to her, "You're never good at asking for permission for landing." And she's like, "I don't need permission," and just kisses him. And you just see this tough exterior, like she owns everything, and she's a really tough bounty hunter. And we learn that she's an ex, one of the exes of Hondo's. So she was Hondo's ex-girlfriend, mistress, who knows. And also the fact that she's so mean and she's so nasty. The whole, in some of these episodes of the Clone Wars, we see that she's with Boba Fett, young Boba, and she's trying to teach him all these bad things. Like, when I say shoot, you shoot next time. And Boba doesn't want to do these bad things. And that's, I mean, you could talk a little bit about Boba later, but generally we see in the Clone Wars, he's not a bad person. He's a young boy. Yes, he wants revenge against Mace Windu, but just when he's getting that revenge and Aura sings with him, Aura will do anything. She'll go to the end. And when in that situation, when she's Boba to shoot, like when they're in the situation with, I think it's Ahsoka and Plo Koon, Master Plo, I'm sidetracking a lot here. Plo has a connection to Ahsoka because he found her when she was a Jedi. See, I got so much and I know about all these prequel characters.
That's what's fun. It unraveled into other conversations very quickly.
Yeah, it does. And that's what I mean. That's why the passion. I've got somebody to talk about it that loves it as much as I do. But yeah, basically, she's just... I don't know. She's just a really, really bad kind of person. She can be nasty. And no wonder why Tobias Beckett killed her. I just pushed her, you know.
That was one of my favorite. In terms of references in Solo, that one, off the top of my head, easily cracks top 3. Because, you know, she's painted as being a real badass. And when we see her in Legends novels... you know, you see the Legacy of the Force series of novels that came out in, the mid-2000s range. And she was still alive at the time of those novels. And she was, painted as, a very long-lasting bounty hunter, still one of the most powerful in the galaxy. And just the fact that she died by simply being pushed. And it's done in so shrugging of a way. And the fact that, that's what gets Lando to join in, because Lando, she was out to try to get him, and Tobias Beckett inadvertently solved a problem. And it's just such a great thing that you would expect her to go down in an epic duel. And maybe there was an epic duel that ended in the push, but it's just so shrugged off that, it really wasn't anything. Don't read too much into it. You know, it just is such a way of, so unceremonious of a way for her to go.
And I was sad to hear that. Like, I love the line. It was hilarious. But then I was also this sadness, like, does that mean so that when we're getting into this 10 years before the Empire era, that's it of Orisinh. So I know whenever new Star Wars things are created, it's part of the canon now. Orisinh can't exist because she's dead. And I love that character. I still love her, even though she's so horrible. But there's one final thing I'll say about her in another episode in season 3, episode 7, called Assassin, as she's going to be the assassin. You just see it. There's no emotion. She's angry. She's just going to do the job. I love it how Padme, she's ready with a gun. Look, hey, I'm involved in this senator thing, so I've got to protect myself as well as all my guards and things, because people are out there to snipe me. It's a thing that happens. And then later on in that whole... like Bossk and Boba Fett and Dengar, she's replaced with Asajj Ventress later on. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Love her. And are you gonna? What are you gonna say about her? I probably said her as much as we really can.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, great character design, and I just love it. Just another, like I said, great example of how the Boon to Eve classic spawned all these fan favorite characters, and the fact that Lucasfilm ran with it, and authors of books ran with it, and you had, these characters continuing to be, the main focus. And so that's really cool. And, you're talking about the relationship that Orisinh has as kind of an adoptive mother role to the young Fett. or at least a mentor of sorts. And this really ties into a conversation that we had on your show just recently after the first episode of the second season of The Mandalorian came out. You know, we talked about how, you know, Mando and the child, that's such a beautiful father-son relationship, and how the child is learning a lot about kindness and care from his adoptive father. But, you know, Boba Fett doesn't have that. And, you know, he went from very cold Jango Fett to now, you know, very cold-hearted and villainous Aurra Sing, and to see how that shapes him. Now, obviously, he's very different than the child in his makeup, because, you know, one is destined to be a bounty hunter, the other is destined to be a Jedi. Nevertheless, just you get to see the adoptive parental role explored in different ways. That what happens if a bounty hunter, someone whose profession is to kill people, is suddenly saddled with a kid, and they need to figure out how to be some sort of influence. Now, obviously, Asajj Ventress is great, but I want to save her for a second because she's the excellent bridge between the bounty hunters to the Sith. So we'll get to her in a moment. But you mentioned Dengar and Boss, so. You know, Aurra Sing was an example of let's pick a bounty hunter from the prequels movies who we saw in the live action. Let's put her in the cartoon. Dengar and Boss, they say, well, let's get ourselves. This is the prequel form. We see them in Empire Strikes Back. What are their younger versions doing?
Do you want me to start with it?
Go ahead.
Well, I don't have a lot to say about them, these guys, because. You know, we don't see a lot of them in the Clone Wars, and I'm not going to talk too much about what they do. And obviously, Empire Strikes Back, they're just standing there. But basically, we see Trandoshans. Is that, have I said that right for Bosk's race?
Yeah, Trandoshans. That's how I always knew them.
Yeah, we do see them, like not Bosk, but we do get an insight of those. I know this is taking now another sidetrack, and. Basically, they're hunters. They're reptiles. They're hunters. The thrill of the hunt, collecting all those heads of different races and creatures that you can see in their ship. And yeah, I feel that that's all I can really see of Bosk or talk about Bosk. Just go to his race, because there's just a few slight scenes we see of Bosk in the. In the Clone Wars, he just does the job. I don't know. I can't. And same with Dengar. He doesn't say much. I mean, it's great to see them, to have a familiarity thing as a, well, if you love the originals, grew up on the originals, you know, you love the prequels. Prequels came out. You love the Clone Wars. Oh, cool. These characters are here. I don't know. I can't really think much more to say of them in the prequel era.
Well, it's fun that how Dengar and Bosk, like Aurra Sing, are kind of part of this collective of bounty hunters that influence Boba Fett. You know, they sort of hang out together and do the same jobs together, that when you see them in Empire, you know, Boba Fett's now the main guy. So it's like they're little boys all grown up, that it kind of was a collective influence. And, you know, you definitely see Bosk, if not in a father role, an older brother role, when they're on the prison in on Coruscant. And, you know, Rocco Hardeen, who we know as Obi-Wan Kenobi, is, you know, inspired to kind of start a prison riot. And so he, one way that gets that going is Boba Fett gets kind of, you know, roughed up a little bit, and Bosk immediately stands up to protect him. And, you know, whether that's because he actually cares about the boy, or because, you know, it's the classic example of I'm getting paid to look after you, or maybe it's just the respect of who his father was in terms of, you know, of Jango Fett. Nonetheless, it's cool to see that all of this crew sticks together that entire long time. You know, they're all a crowd during the Clone Wars and continue to be a crowd by the time of Empire Strikes Back. So during the fall of the Republic and the early Empire, you have to wonder, you know, how close did that relationship last? And one thing I'll say about Dengar, it's neat to see that even in the Clone Wars, he still had the head wrapping, you know. It wasn't the toilet paper look, as people like to rudely call him. But no, he does still have, you know, kind of like a hat of, or like a skull cap kind of on his head with something wrapped around his jaw. And it's more or less confirmed that he shows up eventually in The Rise of Skywalker and has so disfigured his body trying to put various cybernetic enhancements. He's in the Yeah, and the bar scene in Kimiji looks completely unrecognizable. He no longer has any of the headgear, and his eyes look all bizarre, and his ears. He's a very creepy-looking dude. So they gave Boss kind of an unfortunate, pardon me, not Boss, Dengar, kind of an unfortunate trajectory there. But it is fun to see the two of them show up there as the nice nod. And I think that's it for the bounty hunters that have movie appearances that show up in the Clone Wars. But the real stars are the bounty hunters and the pirates who aren't in the movies but show up in the show. And, you know, where I'm really glad that Dave Filoni and company ran with original characters. Mm-hmm. To be like, it makes sense that there should be villains that are in the forefront at this time period who aren't by the time of the Empire. You know, that they have already died off or gotten old or retired. And so it's fun to see that. And, you know, definitely the baddest of the bad, the best of the best bounty hunter there is out there is Mr. Cad Bane, the coolest cowboy of them all.
Yeah. I find him, the thing like I like about him, I love the other characters heaps more. He's not one of my favorite characters. But what I like about him, he's a bounty hunter. You don't see much emotion. He's there to do the job. He'll get on with it. He won't muck around. He won't be silly. And that's it. Really evil kind of. It's not so much that he's evil, but it's, hey, this is what I got to do this job. If I've got to snipe someone or kill someone, and it's this, it's not a big deal. I'll get paid. That's it. Done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what you want in a good bounty hunter. You know, you don't want someone who's chatty. You don't want someone who's all emotional. I mean, maybe if if you're hiring a mercenary, you want someone who has personality because the mercenary is having to do some leadership ability. Maybe, you know, or if you're hiring these bounty hunters that we see as who train the clones on Kamino, you know, you want somebody who's got some drill sergeant ability to pass on their knowledge. Cad Bane doesn't care about that. He just cares about getting the job done. And that's what makes him so ruthless. That's what made Django so ruthless. So that's why you see, you know, there's clearly those connections there. And I know, you know, for a lot of fans, it feels like, oh, Cad Bane seems like he should have been or could have been, you know, Boba's mentor because there's such similarities. But, you know, instead, it looks like it turns out more to be the budding rivalry. At Star Wars Celebration 2017, yes, that was the one in Orlando.
Yeah.
They had they showed sort of the unfinished production stills, or I guess there was vocal recordings, but it was not fully animated, of a duel between Cad Bane and Boba Fett. And we see that Cad Bane is the one responsible for putting the dent in the helmet of Boba Fett. Oh. You see, so they shoot off. The camera doesn't see what happens, but you see Cad Bane's hat fall down to the floor and Boba's helmet shot off with the little dent in there that so famously is used. And I think that since we're going to get the Bad Batch animated series that's going to be a sequel to the Clone Wars series, that they may choose to put this scene in there. I know a lot of people wanted this in season 7 of the Clone Wars, but it didn't really tie into the story. But I think especially now that we have Old Man Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, and they've drawn attention to the dent in the helmet in the show when Cobb Vanth hands the helmet over to, you know, The Mandalorian says, you know, I just want you to know, tell your people, I'm not the one who damaged this. You know, so I think maybe we'll see more of him in animated form and how he replaced it, just as Cad Bane replaced Jango Fett in terms of most stone-cold, badass killer bounty hunter. I think we'll see Boba Fett take over Cad Bane in that show, whenever it does indeed come out. He does some great heists, though, and great stuff in the show, though, Cad Bane.
Yeah, and also Cad Bane, I must say that episode with one of the Hutts, the Purple Hut, Zora the Hutt?
Zero the Hutt. Yes.
Yeah. And tongue twister. You know, they're together or something. And then Quinlan Vos is in that episode. And then Quinlan Vos and Obi-Wan are taking on Cad Bane. And Cad Bane really holds himself against those two Jedis. And it makes me feel that now, if they're going to, that with this Bad Batch, can they have characters such as Cad Bane and Quinlan Vos in it? Because, you know, let's see these bad guys really off the wall or underground. That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To see who who could have survived in the transition from the Republic to the Empire. You know, you know, I think officially they say Quinlan Voss died on Kashyyyk because they had the unused footage, but this would not be the first time they would retcon that, or maybe
I wouldn't
be surprised if the Bad Batch looked more into Order 66 or started right before Order 66 opened up.
Yeah, obviously it depends where it is in the timeline. Yeah,
yeah, I think it'd be a missed opportunity if they did not give Quinlan Voss his due. You know, the fact that he had a death near practically scripted out, and they knew what it was going to look like, but it just didn't make it in to the final cut of the film. They didn't even really shoot it. It was just kind of pre-animated in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I've
unfortunate.
Seen that on YouTube.
So I would not mind at all if they made him survive Order 66 for a little bit afterwards, and then, you know, play around with him a bit, and maybe he'll run into Cad Bane once again, and Cad Bane will finish the job. That would be, you know, a real epic use of, you know, storytelling.
Yeah, well, they had trouble doing his hair, so now the techno, that was 2008, 2010, all that, 12. Mm-hmm. Hey, years later, maybe it might be easier to do his hair, so they might be able to do it. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. While we're on Cad Bane, and we have mentioned Rocco Hardeen, which was a bounty hunter Obi-Wan pretended to be, I want to talk about
Box,
which is probably one of my favorite episodes. It's the third episode and one of my favorite arcs in the Clone Wars. And this is where Obi-Wan fakes his death, supposedly assassinated by a sniper named Rocco Hardeen, the marksman of Concord Dawn, who, you know, fun fact, Concord Dawn, that is where Jango Fett claimed to have been from, I believe.
Okay.
And also Concord Dawn plays a major role in Star Wars Rebels. That's the protectors of Concord Dawn with, what's his name? I cannot remember the guy's name, the leader of the Concord Dawn protectors off the top of my head. It's something, I don't know if it's Fell. I don't know. I'll remember it. I'm sure it's going to strike me like that. But anyhow, the Concord Dawn, you know, is famous in Mandalorian culture. So is that saying that Rocco Hardeen is Mandalorian, or maybe he killed a bunch of Mandalorians? Anyhow, we don't really get to know the real version because Obi-Wan goes under disguise with that. And Obi-Wan as Rocco Hardeen and Murali Vol and Cad Bane all team up together to escape from a prison on Coruscant and plot to, long story short, assassinate the Chancellor, and Obi-Wan is trying to undermine the entire plot. So in the third episode of this arc, they go to this thing called the Box, and it's this kind of tournament of champions for Count Dooku and Murali Vol to determine who are the bounty hunters that we want to use for this this plot, this scheme. And so they get together a bunch of them, and I have tiered them all out in terms of, you know, who's among the best and who's among the worst. So I'll start from tier 4 up to tier 1. So tier 4, I had to look up all these people's names because it's very hard to remember. A lot of their names aren't even said except at the very beginning. So there's Balduga the Athorian. So he's one of the two Athorian brothers. He's by himself in the bottom tier because he gets killed before the tournament even starts. Cad Bane sees his hat and thinks it looks cool, so he just shoots him dead on the spot and takes his hat. So Balduga the Athorian, he's all by himself at the bottom. We never get to see what it is he's capable of doing. Tier 3, there is his brother Anka the Athorian. He doesn't last that long in the tournament. There's Jacoli the Rodian, who also has an unceremonious death. Kira Swan the Weequay, which it's cool to see a Weequay have a career on their own, not just being somebody in someone else's gang. I mean, excluding, you know, Hondo, you know, he's a Weequay, but no, he's a Nikto, I should say. But yeah, so seeing a Weequay actually, you know, stick up for themselves in that kind of cool way. But he or she is the winner of a tournament that we've never heard of when Duke is giving the introductions. And then there's Six Tack, the Saxian. And they die in the target shooting range, and also kind of a forgettable character. Tier 2 are the ones who are promising, but maybe not the best. So there's Darround the Parwan. That's the guy who has the mushroom head, and he can kind of float around. Yeah, his only benefit is that he can safely drink the electromagnetic serum and stick his hand through the shield. And I find that challenge so funny, because that's the final challenge in the But in order for that challenge to have worked, you know, plenty of other people have died on the way up to it. And if he didn't make it, would they have changed what that challenge looked like? You know, because it required him and him alone to be able to do it. But let's say he, you know, was blasted in the very first and fell to a fiery doom. Then, you know, everybody dies because he's the only one who can withstand the toxin. So I don't know if that's the best planning there. Something to think about. Then there's Sindrich the Snivian. That's the Snaggletooth species.
Yep.
Yeah, nice little nod to the original trilogy there. I think that it's the Mos Eisley Cantina is where we first see one of them, right? In the background?
Yeah.
Always good to see a Mos Eisley Cantina species rear their head, or in this case, their snaggly teeth.
We see one again in later on. We'll probably talk about it when we talk about Maul and Savage when
they
take over a ship. Yeah, see another one of them. They're cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to see them get their due. Then there's Montu the Cellcath. I just like to include.
Oh,
him. Yeah, I love Knights Guild Republic, and that's where the Cellcath were introduced.
Yeah.
They're a peaceful people, but here he is, you know, shown to be. You know, fallen. Dooku says that, oh, you were once a proud and peaceful people. Look how the mighty have fallen. Something along those lines. And to see that he's now engaged.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, kind of the bloody profession of bounty hunting. And he has sort of a sad death. He makes it almost to the end, but he ends up being a bridge between two platforms and can barely hold on. And if he falls down and gets electrocuted, and Obi-Wan tries to save him, but to no avail. And then lastly, tier two, I go ahead and put Moralo Evol in there. The reason he's not tier one is we never get to actually see him do anything. He just designs the game and doesn't get to play. So, but that's got to speak for something. And Count Dooku trusted him enough to make him the boss of the gang. But by the end of the episode, he is taken away from being the lead. So the tier one of the box participants is... Cad Bane, who we've already talked about in thorough detail. Mm-hmm. Rocco Hardeen, who we know as Obi-Wan. There's Twazi the Frank. That is the acrobatic lizard lady who is very flexible and can spin around. And in her introduction, Count Dooku says she was a famous acrobatist who earned the praise of Chancellor Valorum himself. Oh. So there's a nice reference to everyone's favorite failed politician, the Chancellor before we got Palpatine in the Phantom Menace. So it's good to see her. And lastly, who's in that tier is Mr. Imbo, who is described as good old Imbo. His bounties this season were second only to Cad Bane. And listeners, if you go back a few episodes, you can hear Zabologist's great song about Imbo that he composed on the spot where he uses his hat as a frisbee.
And it might end up on an album, Star Wars Songs Volume 3, I'm sure.
I hope it did. It had me chuckling fully. Anyhow, that was my quote-unquote quick rundown of the box bounty hunters that we talk about, everybody. Do you have anything to say about any of them or Inbo or any of those folks?
Not a lot. Like, I remember that episode. I've seen it only a few times, and it's pretty cool. And it was just so cool to see a whole bunch of just these bounty hunters and that. But no, I haven't got a lot to say about them. But Imbo, like, I will just sort of say, obviously I love it. Like, as I said, use the hat as a frisbee. But, like, that's a good weapon, and just the look of him is really cool. So,
The crossbow is a great weapon as well. So it's cool to see him used throughout there. And as I'm sure I've mentioned in the past, he's voiced by Dave Filoni. So it's nice to see him put his creative touch in there on the vocal side of things. So next I want to move to someone who isn't quite a bounty hunter, but he works with bounty hunters, and he fits the same sort of villainous arc, but we kind of like him too, more of a hero on occasion. Mm-hmm. And that is Hondo the Pirate.
Oh, I knew you were going to say him. And maybe a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago, I'm losing track of time in this year of 2020, I recently purchased the Hondo Vintage Collection figure. I bought two so I can get one out of the packet. So I'm looking forward to that coming. As we said, he's a man you either love or hate, but I kind of love him. And I love that I can't remember the actor's voice, but I've seen some of the making of him and the actual actor doing Hondo's voice. I love it. It's so good. He's always fooling around in this deceptive talk and just so playful. And the first time we sort of see him is in season 1, episodes 11 and 12. He's Dooku's captured by pirates, so that must be pretty much saying something about that. I mean, how is that even possible? I couldn't believe it. So that's the first time Kenobi encounters Hondo, and then eventually catches Hondo and Anakin, and, you know, doing it in such deceptive ways. I've got Jedi, so let's spike their drinks. we're going to spike the drinks, and then I think the Jedi they knew and they swapped them. But you know, he just has another plan to work it out. But he's always greedy, like wanting money, finding, hey, I've got both sides here, the separatists and the Republic. So he'll get them both here to make an offer, and whoever's going to give him the biggest offer, he'll go for that to make a ransom. He's not interested in, you know, being killing or anything like that. He's interested in making money. As you can see, he's got a huge pirates supporting network. So he has built up his own little neat kind of mini pirate empire or whatever. And just things like, the next time he sees Kenobi in season 2, I can't believe he came all the way out here to see me. And that was when I think the pirates were overtaking some farmers. They were trying to, you know, take their crops and all that sort of stuff. And
yeah, Kenobi's, that's when they go to Felucia, which is another great bounty hunter storyline in terms of the farmers hire the bounty hunters to protect them from the pirates. And the Felucians are just, I love those guys so much. They're so whiny. Why would we be fighting ourselves?
You can't fight,
when we paid for the bounty hunters to do the fighting. You know, that guy, and they got the big old goofy goggles, and they look like little dinosaur people.
Yeah.
They're one of my favorite animation exclusive species are definitely the Felucians.
Yeah, and the other thing, we get more development of Hondo over the series. Like, we do see them have this connection with Obi-Wan, or the fact that Obi-Wan goes when after Hondo caught Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Dooku, and then they were all going to team up to, you know, escape and do whatever they're going to do. Kenobi says, look, I don't have any quarrel with you, Hondo. So he's not going to do anything. He's doing the Jedi way. And Hondo probably gets that respect for him because Hondo could have been arrested. And it happens a couple of times later on. But just, you know, he deals with Darth Maul, and he's like, this isn't the first time I've dealt with this laser sword wielding tattooed crazies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, like later on in season 5, I really like season 5 of the Clone Wars. I remember I just wanted to buy all the DVDs, and I ended up I'll buy one, and I got season 5. It was just, if I had to pick one, I'd pick season 5. But Hondo dealing with the younglings, especially if for all the listeners remember, there was just like 4 episodes where the younglings are getting trained. They get their lightsabers. All this cool stuff happens. We get Dave Tennant from Doctor Who voicing one of these, the robot guy. The droid guy, and we see one of the younglings sort of has a connection with Hondo. I can't remember her name. She's got like a nasally, snotty kind of voice. It bothers me, but she's a cool kind of youngling. I would love to know whether she survived Order 66, and, you know, same. Well, obviously we see Hondo and Rebels, but just something when we see those, when she grows up a bit more, because maybe the Jedi Order's fallen apart, the Empire, what the Jedi live for, she might not necessarily be a bad Jedi, but maybe she might not hide her Jedi powers. She might not have graduated, so to speak, because she was a youngling around the time, and then maybe come into the mentoring of Hondo. But yeah, it just things like he wants kyber crystals. They're rare on the black market. He'll go for that, and attacking that ship with all the younglings. Not even worrying about hurting little kids. The youngling that I was talking about, she's kind of like similar looking to Adi Gallia in the prequels. I think she's only in the Phantom Menace on the Jedi Council.
Yeah, I think it's called like a Thalothian or something. Thalothian or something. A lot of THs in that species name.
Yeah. But look, Hondo, love his voice, love the way he's all, you know, deceiving. Oh, well, Kenobi, I can't believe you've come all the way out here to see me. Just great character. What more can I say? I'd love to hear what you've got to say about him.
Oh yeah, Hondo, I adore. He's voiced by Jim Cummings, who has a very very deep and long voice acting career. You'll recognize him from all sorts of Disney movies, Disney animated movies of the 90s and beyond. He is the voice of Winnie the Pooh, which is pretty fun, even including the most recent, that Christopher Robin kind of live action film with Ewan McGregor in it. So
yeah.
You know, there we go. Double Star Wars casting there.
Yeah.
One thing I love about Hondo is the fact that he has become a mainstay in Star Wars, even past in the Clone Wars, how he, you know, he plays a pretty sizable role in Star Wars Rebels, and how he has become sort of an unofficial mascot of sorts for Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars land at Disney World and Disneyland. You know, Hondo plays a big role in the ride there, Smuggler's Run, I believe. I haven't been yet, but there is an animatronic Hondo or somebody dressed up as him at the very least. And so the fact that we know that he can live for a long time and is still shaking things up. And I do love that, you know, he becomes more of a comedic older man as he grows, and his pirate crew has kind of fallen apart. How, you know, at one point in Rebels, his crew is nothing but a bunch of Ugnaughts, and he actually can speak Ugnaught. So he does the whole snorting and squealing like a pig bit. And one of my favorite lines that tie back to the Clone Wars is when on Rebels, when he finds out that Ezra is a Jedi, he said, "Oh, I was friends with the Jedi once. At least, I think we were friends." So, talking, of course, about Obi-Wan, because they continue to have this will-they-won't-they friendship in a way. And so it's funny to see how that affects his take on things and his connection to the Force, and his connection with users of the Force and his willingness to dive into the, you know, the realm of the rebellion and being a good guy when it's all said and done. So that I really enjoy that growth for him.
Bounty hunters, bounty hunters, bounty hunters.
We don't need the scum.
Bounty hunters, they are not for everyone. Bounty hunters, they'll commit any crime. Bounty hunters, they'll complete the job on time. Mysterious Boba Fett, he'll collect Jabba's debt. Boskin IG-88. Bounty hunting's not so great.
Dengar from Corellia.
Bandage headwear and armor.
Zykos sent for long.
Don't mix them up as they were labeled wrong. Bounty hunters,
we don't need their scum.
Bounty hunters,
they are not for everyone.
Bounty hunters,
they'll commit any crime.
Bounty hunters,
they'll complete the job on time.
Bounty hunters, bounty hunters,
bounty hunters, bounty hunters, bounty hunters, bounty hunters,
bounty hunters, bounty hunters.
That is my song called Bounty Hunters, which is available on my album Star Wars Songs Volume 2 that can be found at Bandcamp. Search Zabologist, Zabologist.
So I want to pivot now from the bounty hunters A quick shout out though to the fact that there's various IG droids running around all the time through the show, which is great, you know, because at first we knew, you know, IG-88 in Empire Strikes Back, and so getting to see them, and then of course now later IG-11 in Mandalorian Season 1. So it's good to see that there is a culture of IG bounty droids. That's really cool. But now I want to talk about the person who's sort of the bridge from a bounty hunter to the Sith. When we meet her, she is a Sith, or at least, you know, a dark side. But in the later season, she has given that life away. She has left, and in the novel Dark Disciple, she's left the apprenticeship of Count Dooku behind her and is operating as a bounty hunter. And this is who we mentioned earlier, Asajj Ventress.
That's right. And I've been a huge fan of her from the beginning, even when we had the first cartoon animated series of The Clone Wars. We see her character and she has a duel with Anakin and looks pretty cool. But yeah, the Night Sisters. So basically season three, it's good to see where she's comes from. And we learn a lot about her during the time when she's having that fallout with Dooku, that she had an apprentice, apprentice dies and she gets another apprentice. So these are reasons why that can lead her to the dark side, or, you know, there's still a mystery she's left the Jedi Order. But it's the fact that the emotion that Dooku, like Palpatine said to Dooku, look, I feel that your apprentice is becoming more powerful. I mean, the rule should only be two, but obviously we're gonna make Clone Wars. We're gonna find a way to sort of change that rule to entertain us. And so she's got to be eliminated, and then so obviously Asajj feels hurt, you know, betrayed. So she's gonna take her revenge, and The thing I love about Asajj, I love her lightsabers. She's got two, and the similar curve to like Dooku. So that's probably how she got trained in a similar way. And I love the three-way Sith flight between Asajj Ventress, Dooku, and Savage Opress, which we'll talk about him later on with the connections with Asajj. And yeah, she basically is, I love her. She's just amazing. She's just nasty. But the thing is I like about her is, as we see in character development, when, like, because we're going to be talking about Savage and Darth Maul later on, I won't get into too much about them, but I'll just obviously say, well, obviously all the listeners, a lot of them would be prequels and Clone Wars fans, that we know that she goes to Mother Talzin and creates an apprentice, Savage Opress, to assassinate Dooku. And I mean, there's a few other attempts she does and she never gets there. But basically there's the time where Savage obviously separates and wakes up and goes his own way because he's under a spell to be her apprentice. But I love the fact that Asajj teams up with Obi-Wan at one stage because they're on that ship with Maul and Savage. And, you know, Asajj gives Obi-Wan whatever red lightsaber she's got too, and he goes, red's not my color. But just things like that, we see this gray area of a character that, yeah, she's part of the Separatists. She's part of an apprentice of a Sith. She's deceived and disowned and betrayed. So she takes on her own life outside. So she's come outside of the Jedi Order to sort of like a Sith training, and then outside of the Sith. So where is she? And then this leads her into bounty hunting. And in the bounty hunting, we see that we see a little bit of a heart in her at that episode where she finds out that the prize that they were giving away, because the chest got knocked open and the princess fell out and she was promised to be married, she doesn't give away that person. So she's not completely bad. And I've read, I won't talk too much about this book, Dark Disciple, just in case people haven't read it and I don't want to give away spoilers in that, but we get to see another amazing character in the, because she works with Quinlan Vos, because the idea is those two are going to go and assassinate Dooku, and who's the right person, someone who has something against him. But we do really see a lot in her personality and her character, and just the way she sort of treated Boba in the way that, like, you know, she just controls everything. Out of all those bounty hunters on the train, she's one of the ones that doesn't fall off and survives, and she's wrapped Boba up in the little chest and lets the girl escape. So I must say, love it. What I could probably keep saying more on her, and I'll probably touch up on again when we talk about Savage and more to tie some things in there. But yeah, wonderful character.
Oh yes, you know, Asajj Ventress, what makes her so fun is that we had never seen, you know, outside of the comics and the books, but in terms of the visual medium of either films or TV shows, we had never seen what a female Sith looked like and how they act, or how would, you know, a woman tap into the dark side of the Force and sort of play into that kind of femme fatale feel and use her strengths, you know, because you think about kind of sort of various villain tropes. The Sith have the potential to be very vampiric in a way, in the sense that, you know, you think of the classic vampire story in which, you know, they are seducers or seductresses. The fact that, oh, they have this appeal with them, and that's how they manage to, you know, entrap their enemies and lure them. But we don't really see that in terms of, you know, Darth Maul is very much consumed by rage. You know, Palpatine is very much consumed by power. Yeah, Vader is very much consumed by revenge and sadness. But Asajj, I mean, she has all of those going for her, but she plays, you know, like almost sort of a sexy villain in that type of way. They musically give her this theme with the strings on it and the way that she's flirtatious with her enemies, and that's how she gets in their head. And it's super cool to see them do that. And, you know, to see that she's, you know, not afraid to use her perceived disadvantages as her advantages as a Sith. So then it's really neat to see that executed. And, you know, it's a shame that she continues to be the only person we've seen do that, you know, because the new shows and the movies are still yet to give us. I'm sorry, I stand corrected, because we see the Seventh Sister in Star Wars Rebels. So I do stand corrected there. But, you know, outside of Asajj and the Seventh Sister, we don't really see a female dark side user. Luckily, the Jedi Fallen Order, we do see the main villain, once again, Inquisitors. We see two of the Inquisitors be the villains there. But, you know, the fact that dark side users generally tend to be men in terms of what we see of them. We think of Snoke, Kylo Ren, we think of Darth Maul, we think of Darth Vader, we think of Palpatine, we think of Darth Plagueis. You know, you follow that whole line, Count Dooku, it's all dudes. And so it's nice to see a woman, you know, and how her relationship with the dark side is different, and how her fighting style is more graceful and like dancing in a way. Yeah. So it's cool to see that fully explored. And yeah, like you said, Dark Disciple is a truly beautiful story. Yeah. It's a great written book. It probably is my favorite of the Star Wars books of the new canon since Disney bought the rights to Lucas, all the Lucasfilm stuff and the Star Wars story. So I think she's great. And yeah, I could talk about that book for a long time, but I always encourage people to read it.
Yeah, so I want people to read it.
In case there's listeners who want to. So please go out and read it. It's a must.
Yeah. Wonderful. Will we get on to Savage Opress now because of Savage?
Yeah, let's Asajj and Savage. A nice rhyming thing there. We'll talk about Maul, and then we'll
Loop back. Oh, okay. You want to go Maul first?
Because, yes, they all stem from the whole Maul thing. Yeah. So Maul is the first, you know, red saber wielding character who we get to see in the prequels. You know.
Yeah.
And when we see it in The Phantom Menace, in the epic double-sided lightsaber that, you know, the first time people saw the action figure or saw the trailer and got to see what that looked like, you know, something brand new and inspired children, young adults, the elderly across the world to all pick up sticks and for the first time not hold the sticks at the base with two hands, but put their hands in the middle and pretend they have double-sided lightsabers there. It really opened a realm of imaginative possibilities. You know, a lot of people, when The Phantom Menace came out, felt that Maul was terribly, you know, underused or not given full justice, the fact that he was unceremoniously cut in half. But that's why you gotta love that The Clone Wars brings him back and, you know, gives him this hatred of Obi-Wan that fuels his storyline through The Clone Wars and through Star Wars Rebels. And, yeah, he's just a great look. So just to set the Maul stage, at the time when Asajj Ventress is doing her thing, Maul is presumed by the general public to be dead, and Asajj is needing a new ally. So that's what transitions her to find someone who is like Maul, but not quite him. And that's how we get to Mr. Savage Opress.
Yeah. I'll just, as before I get on to Savage Opress, obviously, Maul, we know him, and it's just wonderful. Like, good idea, George. Hey. We didn't get to use him much in the film because George is telling the story. It makes sense. The duel of the fates. This is the fate of Maul's killed Qui-Gon, who's supposed to, as we know, the beautiful Filoni speech. You know, Qui-Gon's supposed to have Anakin as an apprentice, and then Obi-Wan kills Maul. So that's ended that part to move on to get the next apprentice, hence Dooku and Anakin. But it was fantastic, the fact that he can live off that hate and that revenge, wanting to get revenge back onto Obi-Wan, him going crazy, getting his spider legs, probably infuse that with the training of the Force from his powerful Sith master from Palpatine, as he mentions to Palpatine at the end of in the fifth season when he confronts him to say, I used your training to survive. So it just really shows how much of a strong character he is. The fact that we got to see him in Solo, that he's looking after the underground, which is what I very much hoped for, and out of the way and not getting involved in any Emperor Palpatine or Vader's business. But this just sort of shows it is a massive galaxy, that there are always going to be Jedi or Sith or Force users lurking around somewhere. They're not the one, like Luke Skywalker was the one, the chosen one, or the son of the chosen one, or the one who can bring balance to the Force. But the other Jedi is probably nowhere near strong enough. That's where they're probably all hiding. But yeah, it's just the fact that Maul's revenge against Obi-Wan, the fact that he takes on Obi-Wan so many times to try and get him and kill him, and then he just wants him to suffer. So the fact that Maul has killed Satine Kryze, Obi-Wan's loved chosen one, the sister of Bo-Katan, which we won't say anything more about her just in case. And you know what I mean? And I love how he orchestrates the Pikes, the Black Sun, and everyone, Mandalore, Death Watch, to organize his underground and the huts, and just how he just kills the huts. Like, okay, where's Jabba the Hutt? He's on, you know, like Tatooine, you know, we knew that. And having Savage as his apprentice, taking him on because they were brothers. But yeah, it's just really good to see a character develop of him, Sam Witwer voicing him. I've seen Sam Witwer like in Supergirl as an actor who was one of the evil villains. He's a great guy. And I'm thinking, he's like, oh, that's the guy who voices Darth Maul. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and still to this day, the final thing I say about Maul is every now and then I'll go on Instagram and I'll see Ray Park doing some double lightsaber. And I'm just going to say something out there to the listeners. I got a purple lightsaber because purple is my favorite color. Not that I'm a huge Mace Windu fan, but I just love purple. And it was one of those ones that look real, the metal and everything. And I did a little video of it. It's pretty cool. Fine. I might do a few more of those. But yeah, just like Ray Park, just moving around. And one day I would like to get a double lightsaber like Ray Park and try and do some of those moves. It's very inspirational, and I've loved over the years seeing kids doing that and doing it really well and seeing videos. So fantastic.
Yeah, he is a super cool guy. I did the whole like get an autograph from him at Star Wars Celebration 2015 in Anaheim.
Oh,
and he was super friendly. You know, a lot of these guys, when you do this, when you do the autographs for him, you can also pay to get the photo at a different session. And so oftentimes, like, oh, if you didn't pay for the photo, you can't get one. But he offered to get a photo with everybody, in the autograph line. Unfortunately, my phone died, so I missed getting the photo with him, even though he was offering it for free. You know, because the professional grade ones were probably costing, you know, $40. It's more expensive now because the whole rates have gone up. But I did get an old Darth Maul comic side by him, and he's just super nice, super friendly. And I know that he's run into some unfortunate instances on social media kind of recently, or, you know, a couple of months ago, but I think he's on the tail end of that. I don't know. I don't want to dive into his personal life that may or may not have been exposed there. But, yeah, he's very talented, and it's cool to see that, you know, even at, you know, he's getting up there in the years, he's still super nimble. Yeah. And what he's able to accomplish, which we saw with season 7 of the Clone Wars, and they did the whole motion capture for the fight. And it's just beautiful to see that, and that just really shows where, you know, technology has gone to be able to seamlessly translate that. And you can tell a huge difference when looking at that versus just simply animated it because of the footwork and just the muscle definition and movement in that scene. So, I mean, he really set the stage for how, you know, people of my generation perceived what is it our Sith capable of doing. You know, it's not just, you know, because in the original trilogy, we saw bumbling old Darth Vader in that suit and the Emperor, who was an old guy. So to see, like, oh, you can be young and flashy, you know, that there actually is skill set. It's not just force lining, lightning, and brute strength, you know, but there really is, you know, go totally, you know, balls to the wall and flip around and do fun stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so cool.
Absolutely. And so what, now we go on to Savage Opress?
Yes, now we'll go to his brother.
And at one stage, he's like, brother, you're not brother. I'm the master and you're the apprentice. You know, Darth Maul showing his power because there should be two. We are the original two. Oh, the grand plan is going to happen. I should be part of that. So you can see that he wants to take his own place to be the leader of the Sith. But Savage, this is way before Maul came in, and not having any idea that we're going to get Darth Maul coming back, but it's like, oh, cool, we get a Darth Maul type character. Yeah, he's yellow. They've put Mother Talzin, put some magic on him his whole purpose was to kill Dooku and pretend to be Asajj's apprentice by knocking him on the head to use the magic to put him under the spell. And we see he is ruthless, killing the, Toydarian. He wasn't supposed to when he goes to Toydaria and he has that mission from Dooku to kill him. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is I could never get it. Like, the fact that Mother tells Dooku, hey, I understand. I hear rumors or something that you need a new apprentice. I can give you one. Wouldn't, like, Dooku be a bit sus to say, well, hang on a moment. How did you find out? And why are you giving me an apprentice? You are, I got a massage from you. So isn't this a bit fishy?
Yeah, it's like you don't have a good track record.
What?
Yeah. You have to imagine that, like, maybe she's casting a spell on him or something that's making him think okay with it. Or he's just really overworked. You know, he just really was like, oh, fine, I'll take it. Because he's desperate to have somebody. But he, you know, he seems just fine after he loses Savage. Like, okay, the past two failed on me. I'm not going to bother getting a third. It definitely is confusing that he's so open to the prospect.
Yeah,
you know,
but
there's
anyway,
not any degree of like, now hold on a moment. Let me at least vet this. Why is she here all of a sudden? I haven't seen her in a long time. And it's kind of like by the time you get to the episode Massacre, which is when they go to Dathomir and they kill all the Night Sisters and whatnot.
Yes.
You can really see that's Dooku's just kind of like, I'm making up for a bad mistake. Grievous, you go clean up after my problems. Like, this was just a disaster of the highest possible order. I want this gone. I'm sick and tired of these people popping up in my life and causing problems, so just go wreck it up. So, I think that's the whole plot there.
Yeah. And like one thing I was excited to see, now help me out here. We talked about it. I think we talked about it on my episodes for The Mandalorian because we did see a race similar to Maul and Opress. What are they called? Where are they from?
So those are generally called Zabrax.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, Zabrax. And so, but then it's a Dathomiri Night Brother is what specifically Maul and Savage Opress are. So
I suppose it's the same race and they're born on Dathomir, or they come
Yeah, it seems like they were either born on Dathomir or some you know, a similar shared ancestor made it there, or you know. But it's interesting, yeah, how the Knight Brothers are definitely the bottom class of Dathomir, and they're kind of scrawny looking, and so that's why there's that great episode where a handful of them, you know, have to fight effectively to the death, and the winner gets elevated and promoted and bulked up, and all of that jazz there. So it's cool to see that structure where, you know, it's a society where the women witches are kind of in control and the Knight Brothers are sort of primal slaves to it all.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, going by memory, that came from the legends, one of the stories when they did have the Dathomir and they said the females were the dominant on that planet.
Yes, the courtship of Princess Leia.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, that's the book. Yeah, I remember that. But I've always imagined that, especially when I did see Savage Opress, like, oh, they come in yellow. It's like, do they come in some other cool colors, like purple, green, and blue? And then they got matching lightsabers to the colors, so Savage should actually have a yellow one. You know, that's just me and my colors that I love. Mm-hmm. I reckon that'd be pretty cool. And have different clans, like you have a planet full of them, and then the red ones are somewhere else, and the yellow ones are somewhere. The green ones are probably in the forest and the trees, camouflage. The blue ones are part of the aquatic water, and they've got the blue lightsabers or something. And that'd be pretty cool, but that's just me with my wonderful creative mind. Come on, Filoni, are you listening? You know?
I would have loved to have seen that for sure.
Yeah. I'll just, final words on Savage, I'll just say that, what do I have here? Having a look here in my notes. No, I don't have much more else to say about him, but I thought he was pretty cool. Bought the figure when he came out, and great to see one of those. I thought it was a great use of Maul to have an apprentice. Like, it fit really well in with the story, mm-hmm. because a Sith always wants to have an apprentice. And I thought it was fantastic that they accidentally bumped into Death Watch and from there on took over Mandalore, and, you know, Savage eventually gets killed by the Emperor.
Yep.
Palpatine doesn't need him. Palpatine can wipe him out. Like, Savage is no match to Palpatine at all, for sure. And it's like, yeah, Palpatine will just keep Maul to do his deeds. There you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Maul DeLorean armor is probably some of my favorite in the whole franchise, which is, you know, he redoes the Death Watch armor to no longer be that blue and black and silver, but to be red and black, and the helmets have little Darth Maul
spikes.
And that's super cool. And yeah, the Mandalorians, the fact that legacy hangs over Mandalore during the later part of the Clone Wars after Maul is, or the post-Clone Wars after Maul's gone, and then during the Imperial time as well, which makes me remember the name of that guy who was the head of the Concord Dawn. That was Fenn Rau, was the head of the Protectors of the Concord Dawn. And he had a beef with the people of the kind of the Maul followers of the Mandalorians, and how that legacy hangs over that whole planet and the Darksaber, which is playing a role in the Mandalorian TV show. So bringing together like some visual fan favorites, Mandalorians and Darth Maul, let's smack them together and see what happens. And they do a great job with it. And that, you know, continues to be, you know, one of my favorite parts of the Clone Wars, seeing the relationship, but just let's get two things that look cool that the fans like and actually execute it well. And so that's super neat. So,
I'll just say one thing about Savage. Yeah, he killed Adi Gallia. Is that, I'm sure it was Adi Gallia, like, because she was with Obi-Wan when they went to take on Maul and Savage Opress, and he was the one who actually killed her. It's pretty horrible, but
yeah, he has a pretty strong track record. He takes down that one kind of nameless Jedi Master and his Padawan pretty early on. And you know, that at the time he does that, he doesn't even have a lightsaber. He's got a big old axe. Yeah, sort of a big, heavy slashing weapon, just to show his sheer strength without even requiring the blade there. So it's super cool. And, you know, so it's kind of funny, in this whole conversation, we've sort of been dancing around kind of the big Sith of the era who isn't Palpatine himself. And that, of course, is Count Dooku, who, in the prequels plays such a big role, especially in Attack of the Clones. And, you know, he does just a little bit at the beginning in Revenge of the Sith. But, you know, it's cool to see how he really holds his own. And at multiple times throughout the movies and the shows, you see just how powerful Dooku is. The fact that, you know, Anakin plus Obi-Wan is not enough to take him down in Attack of the Clones. That even Yoda, He knows to exploit Yoda's weakness as a protector of friends that, you can probably beat me, but let me endanger Obi-Wan and Anakin so I can get out of here, you know? And he has that super cool ship that he flies with the little, you know, robotic captain.
Yeah, so cool.
Sort of solar sailing barge looking thing. And, you know, in the Clone Wars, he is super, you know, fashionable. He has those silk pajamas that he wears, I love that his silk pajamas are an unlockable outfit in Star Wars Battlefront. So you can see people, you know, in the actual, you know, video game fighting each other, and some guy will come out as Count Dooku in his pajamas, slashing down a bunch of clone troopers. Mm. So it's funny to imagine that actually happened. And it's great that the show shows him as not just a master at, you know, a master swordsman and with the source and with the force, but that he also is a great statesman, that he manages to convince the Separatist Council and the Separatist Senate and all these other people to follow him, and that, oh, he really is a grand idealist. None of this could happen without him. So it's cool to see him as the villain throughout, you know, effectively a film and a half, or I guess a film and a third, and just the influence that he has. You have to imagine, you know, if had he taken down Palpatine for some reason, had he challenged him to be, you know, the Dark Lord of the Sith, the number one in the rule of two, what the universe would have looked like. And obviously we see Dooku gets, you know, further explored in the audio drama, which you can now, I guess, just buy the script and read as a book, Dooku Jedi Lost. And then references to Dooku scattered throughout Master and Apprentice. So I'm really glad he's getting his due.
I feel like I learned a little bit more about him in Master and Apprentice. Now, I might not want to say too much here because I'd love the listeners to read the book and not give it out any spoilers or something, but it gave me another insight, just his slight few bits of appearances in Master Apprentice, because in the book they actually go back to the past or something. So you see him mentoring Qui-Gon and all those sorts of things. And it would be interesting to read Jedi Lost. And I remember going way back in, not long after Attack of the Clones, all these comics coming out, we're just getting flooded. We still are getting flooded with Star Wars comics, but I sort of stopped and retired maybe a year or two ago. I got so many, I had enough, but I was getting into this whole Lost 20. So Dooku being part of the Lost 20, and there was a little side story in the comics about that. So that would be quite interesting to sort of see, hang on, how come Dooku left the Jedi Order? And I think we might have had this conversation, or maybe I had it with Dale, I can't remember. But basically, you don't have enough time in these movies to tell the full story about where Dooku fits in there. So it's always kind of strange that we're getting the Attack of the Clones, and Mace Windu sort of saying, it's not even his character to be doing all this stuff. You know, Dooku's such a wonderful Jedi, but we just see that bad part of him. And it's sort of like to the actor, like Christopher Lee, like same for him in The Lord of the Rings. He has, like, in the second movie, he didn't get much of a part because his character dies. And it's the same. We get him right at the end of Attack of the Clones and then the beginning of The Revenge of the Sith, and he dies. So it's good the Clone Wars gave him an opportunity to see where he fit in within the Clone Wars battles and his character development. Curious. Maybe I should really look at Jedi Lost and a few other stories about him. I'd love to know him being apprenticed to Qui-Gon and more about him. And then it when you do read those stories, it just does make much more of an effect when you watch Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's he's super cool. And yeah, it is really fun. And, you know, at some point I'm going to give The Lord of the Rings its due on this show to talk about how the Lord of the Rings film franchise was being released at the same time as the prequels. You know, Dooku and Saruman, both played by Christopher Lee, have so many similarities between the two of them. And it's fun to see the nuances in their performances there, where it's, you know, both of them are shown as sage and wise and having, you know, being lovers of sort of very, you know, lovers of nature and things in the forest, and what drove them to be bad. Where was that corruption? So, yeah, the comparison between those two is very evident, besides just that it's portrayed by the same person. So, yeah, I really love Dooku. And I think that he, you know, is often overlooked because of the fact that he's kind of framed by the two cooler looking bad guys. How in, you know, The Phantom Menace, you have Darth Maul. And then Revenge of the Sith, even though Dooku's in it, General Grievous is sort of the big baddie that wields lightsaber. And he's got four arms and he's a crazy looking robot man. And it makes sense because it's the droid army. So you should have a droid looking general. And so Count Dooku, you know, oh, here's just an old white guy. And so I think a lot of people don't give him the credit because he just doesn't look as cool. And he's pretty standard and he's really conventional. But that's what makes him so, you know, I guess comforting in a way to see like, oh, this is just showing like the classic swordsman and force user who's just so confident in his own ability that he's able to project that. And I think it's fantastic. And I love that, you know, the past 2 years we've seen more literature about him, you know, during his time as the Count of he's left the Jedi Order and is in the process of leaving it. It is that he starts to struggle with for sure.
Well, the thing is with Dooku and Qui-Gon, they're ones that went off the outside the box of what the Jedi Council and the Jedi in general. Like, obviously, Qui-Gon stuck to the values of being a Jedi and more spiritual. And yeah, we've talked about this a lot. We've talked about it with Hugh or Dale or something. But the fact that Dooku went the other way, but you can see that because they're in general, you're going along with the rules and you're learning your training of being a Jedi and then whether you're going on to being a Count or a Sith or whatever, but you're thinking outside the box to become to more power or to make a change, or because I feel that where the Jedi Order was in the Jedi Council, they needed that change. Like the more stories and the more I'm learning about it, the more I'm getting into it. It's like, yeah, sure, they're the keepers of the peace. This is happening because Dooku's like, hey, he's going outside the box because there's a Sith, there's Palpatine, and Qui-Gon's like, hey, we should be off this. We need to be able to fight against these Sith or to be able to move forward. We can't be ruled by a bunch of politicians or organized by a bunch of politicians or, you know, anyway, it's interesting. It's just fascinating.
Like, it really is. It absolutely is. And it's cool that, you know, even though Palpatine is the main villain of the Clone Wars and of the prequels, you know, we really don't get to see him in that role because he's all behind the scenes. And so Dooku effectively is the main villain in the popular view, you know, that he is the leader of the Separatists. And so, you know, the Clone Wars, he is definitely painted as the big baddie, even though we know he's not. He's just as much a tool as everybody else. But it's cool to see him fill that role. Anyhow, that's all I have to say about all the characters we have here. It's, you know, a good discussion. And, you know, as we see, there's so much interwoven stuff between bounty hunters, Sith, and pirates, this kind of soup of, the bad characters out there. And, you know, that's not even necessarily touching on all the other, you know, unique people of the crime syndicates out there. You know, we did mention the Hutts a little bit, and you have Crimson Dawn later down the road. But you do have, Black Sun and the Pikes, and how that is all, you know, interwoven and how there is a seedy side of Star Wars and how, you know, Palpatine is kind of the puppet master behind all of them in his own unique way. And so it's really cool to see that unfold. But anyhow, on that delightful note, thank you so much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad we have this routine of you coming on at least every 11th episode, but with spatterings in between, it's all super worth it. And I'm really excited that the wonderful person, Charlie Ashby, who does the artwork or the pictures for the promotional pictures for the episodes, just sent me the one that he has for this one. So I'm excited for you to see that. So it's very cool indeed. Do you have anything that you want to promote about your podcast or anything else you have going on?
Sure. I'll just say, so as the listeners should not already know by now, if not, that's okay. I'm totally not offended, but I do a podcast with Dale called It's True, All of It, another Star Wars podcast. Currently we're doing week by week a discussion review of how much we enjoyed the latest Mandalorian episode. It's usually released a few days after, like on the Sunday or the Monday. Reed and I spoke about the first episode, so you can find that. And you're going to get a lovely commercial break between, so you can have a bit of a break when you're listening to our chat, and also a lovely song at the end. And maybe you might get a surprise and a song at the end of this podcast. I'll have to send a song to read. But also you can find my music called Star Wars Songs. There's an album called Star Wars Songs Volume 1, and Volume 2 will be out soon on Bandcamp. And you could probably find a few songs on YouTube, and it's under my name, my performance name, which is Zarbologist, S-Z-A-B-O-L-O-G-I-S-T.
It's truly wonderful stuff. All of his music is great. You know, as all of you know, Zarbologist does the intro theme and outro theme here for the show. And we've played some of his music in the past. He was on the show probably 5 or 6 episodes ago, where we got to do the musical improv. And so it's really cool to hear it all put together there. So thank you all for swinging by. This has been a real delight. And Zarbologist, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Good night to you. That is my song called Dooku, which is available on my album Star Wars Songs Volume 2 that can be found at Bandcamp. Search Zarbologist, S-Z-A-B-O-L-O-G-I-S-T.